Continuing with our series in spiritual depression or spiritual encouragement, and we hope to finish this before the summer. And we have looked the last few Sundays at one aspect of spiritual depression, which can be termed a spirit of fear or a spirit of bondage. Lloyd-Jones has that title as a chapter in his most excellent book. And in our circle, this is a very a powerful thing. And it causes us to be robbed of the glorious liberty of the child of God, and to be constantly looking at one another and looking over our shoulders instead of looking to the Lord. Now, the Lord has freed us to liberty, not to license, not to do what we want, but to follow him. And following him is not an onerous task. Yes, it can be very hard at times, but as John says, his commandments are not grievous because we keep them out of love. It's not fear, not a craven fear that moves us, but love. And last time, we just considered all the things that are extra from the Bible that are often used by the moral police in order to bind us. And we should very, very carefully use these things. We don't want to offend weaker brethren. And it's not out of fear, then, that we may adopt certain extra-biblical things, but out of love, because we don't want to offend anybody. I mentioned a lecturer we had in Bible college who was told off by one of the students for not wearing a tie, and the next day he appeared in a tie, not because he believed that the tie was binding, but he did not want to cause offence. It gives new meaning to the verse, "Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love." If a tie offends my brother, then I will wear one. That's the kind of thing we are considering. So we don't want to be bound by anything. Our consciences should be bound to one thing, the word. But because we are free, we will then not abuse our liberty, but out of love, we will be looking out for one another. But also, we need to be enlightened, and we shouldn't let the professional weaker brother have the way completely. Now, we're still going to dwell with this fear this evening, but not so much the spirit of fear that leads to bondage, but just fear. Have you ever had that? We have it in one hymn. "Days of darkness still come o'er me." When did you last have darkness descending upon you? It often happens at nights. We can lay down in bed and we can be overcome by fears. And when we're woken up in the morning, we see them for what they are, just fears. But in the dark, they haunt us. And it's not just one fear, but we're, as it were, attacked on every front. And it's a horrible thing. There's such a thing as a darkness that can be felt. Have you had that? Now, I want us to look tonight at Hebrews 13. This is the best verse for this aspect of depression. Verse 5b, and then verse 6, Hebrews 13. "For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you, so we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" Can I put it like this? Somebody described depression, I think it was Winston Churchill, as a black dog. And at times, the black dog roars, and we can't stop it. And it's not a dog, it's a Rottweiler, the dog that we're all afraid of. Somebody else put it like this: I try to drown my sorrows, but my sorrows learn to swim. You're just completely overwhelmed. Or somebody put it to me like this this morning: it's not just that you're in the boats during the storm on the Sea of Galilee, afraid with the other disciples, but you're actually in the sea, and you feel as if you're sinking, and there's nothing firm to hold on to. This horrible fear that can descend upon us as Christians. Now, let me just go through a few of these attacks, the different fronts that we're attacked from, before looking at the antidote, which is what we need to consider tonight. Maybe you are suffering in some of these ways tonight. We sang in that last hymn, "When disappointments are gone." Isn't that a horrible thing? Disappointments. And it can cause us to quake with fear. We've already looked at David in this series. David, who had been anointed king of Israel for 15 years, had to wait, and he didn't wait in the palace. He waited as a fugitive, and for most of that time, he didn't even dwell in the promised land. He was in enemy territory, and it went as far as this. He had to feign madness before a heathen king. He got to the borderlands of despair. That's how disappointments can work in our hearts. Is there anybody here in that category? As a Christian, you've made great plans, maybe had great expectations, and one by one, they've been dashed to pieces, and you're left down on the ground, full of disappointments. And that can cause you to fear. It won't just eat into your heart like a spiritual cancer, but it'll cause you to be really afraid. Disappointments. Disappointments. Then what else? Need I mention this? Illness. Illness. As we're getting older, our bodies are more prone to illnesses. I think I'm getting to that age now where one is more prone to have breakdowns. I'm not saying that because I think I'm heading that way. But when you get into middle age, because your mind isn't as active as it once was, you can't handle certain situations as well. And so what I'm trying to say is this: we shouldn't be surprised as Christians if we get to middle age and we find ourselves beginning to flounder and not be able to cope with things that we once were able to take in our stride. You know, our bodies are wonderfully made, this relationship between the physical and the spiritual. And if your body gets ill, if you break a bone or something, it will affect how you feel spiritually. And it's especially true when we're dealing with the sorrows of the mind, with clinical depression. Let me put it like this. None of us here would hold to a prosperity gospel, I hope. Not in our heads, but do you in your hearts equate blessing, God's blessing, with being healthy? Now, of course, it is a blessing in his common grace to have good health. But how many of us fall into the trap without admitting it, that if we're ill, somehow God is angry with us? Now, that is completely unbiblical. What about Job? One of God's friends, and God allowed Job to get really ill, and Job had disappointments galore. Take this description of the Apostle Paul. I don't know what health and wealth preachers would make of this. The Apostle Paul, what kind of experience did he have as the apostle to the Gentiles? Did he have a private jet? Did he stay in the best hotels where he went? Not at all. Listen to this, 2 Corinthians 4:7. He goes through some of his experiences. We are hard pressed on every side, not just on one side. Yet we're not crushed. We are perplexed, yet not in despair. Persecuted, yet not forsaken. Struck down, yet not destroyed. Now you're in good company if weakness, ill health is dogging you, and you're not the person you once were spiritually because of these things. Paul was in exactly the same position. Now what about Spurgeon? During the latter part of his ministry, Spurgeon wasn't in the pulpit of the Met Tab half the time because he had to recuperate in the south of France in Menton. And yet God still mightily used him. And what about our former pastor? I've heard of accounts where he had to be carried into this pulpit. And you would have thought that that would have had a depressing influence. And in many ways, it had that aspect. But God, in our weakness, makes his strength more to be seen. Loss. Some of you have lost your jobs. The blow to one's confidence. The economic uncertainty we're going into at this moment, the fear of poverty, these are the kind of things that can keep us awake during the night. Fear of where the money is going to come from, the doing of the maths, and finding that the sums don't add up. Now, all of these things can have a spiritual impact on us and drag us down and cause us to be in such a slough of despond that we don't know how to get back out of it. And yet what I'm trying to say is there's nothing new here. We're not alone. This is how the saints have always had it. You may think of John Calvin as some dry-as-dust theologian in his ivory tower in Geneva. He wasn't, you know. He was a man like many of us. He cowered before the youth of Geneva when they kind of insulted him. He wasn't a strong man physically. And this is the way he put it. I like this. Innumerable are the evils that beset human life. Innumerable, too, the deaths that threaten it. We need not go beyond ourselves, since our body is the receptacle of 1,000 diseases. In fact, holds within itself and fosters the causes of diseases. A man cannot go about unburdened by many forms of his own destruction, and without drawing out a life enveloped, as it were, with death. For what else would you call it when he neither freezes nor sweats without danger? Now, wherever you turn, all things around you not only are hardly to be trusted, but almost openly menace and seem to threaten immediate death. And they didn't have health and safety. Embark upon a ship, you are one step away from death. Mount a horse, if one foot slips, your life is imperiled. Go through the city streets, you are subject to as many dangers as there are tiles on the roofs. If there is a weapon in your hand or a friend's, harm awaits. All the fierce animals you see are armed for your destruction. But if you try to shut yourself up in a walled garden, seemingly delightful, there's a serpent sometimes hidden. Your house, continually in danger of fire, threatens in the daytime to impoverish you, at night even to collapse upon you. Your field, since it is exposed to hail, frost, drought, and other calamities, threatens you with barrenness and hence famine. I pass over poisonings, ambushes, robberies, open violence, which in part besiege us at home, in part dog us abroad. Amid these tribulations, must not man be most miserable, since but half alive in life, he weakly draws his anxious and languid breath, as if he had a sword perpetually hanging over his neck. Doesn't life feel like that? Everywhere we turn, there seems to be danger. And if we're the thinking kind of person, it completely takes over at times, and we're cast down by fears. Not just fear, fears. What else? Let me just go through one or two other things. Forsakenness. Isn't this the worst fear? The fear of being completely isolated. Do you know what it is to be amongst the people of God and to be completely cold-shouldered, to feel completely alone? Again, David had that experience. You only have to read in Psalm 55. I believe this is the devil's strategy at this moment. He wants to divide people who are of one mind. And he insinuates all sorts of things so that we can mistrust one another. And David puts it like this. These are very poignant words in Psalm 55. Verse 12, it was not an enemy who reproaches me. Then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me. Then I would hide from him. But it was you, a man, my equal, my companion and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked to the house of God in the throng. Oh, I could cope being back a generation ago when we evangelicals stood as brothers against the liberals. The enemy was clear then. But I can't cope with this suspicion in the evangelical camp. David felt like that. And what about this? To me, this is the worst fear of all. The sense of being forsaken by God. Now, don't say to me, Pastor, hasn't he promised to be always with us? Yes, we're going to come to that. But in our experience, there are times, and this is the thickest darkness of all, when we're in Doubting Castle under giant despair, and you can't say to a person then, buckle up. He's always with you. Because it doesn't feel like that. Doesn't feel like that. How can you explain David, out of sincerity, writing, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I know that's a messianic psalm, but initially it was written as the experience of the man after God's own heart. Now, some of you will not have been to Doubting Castle, and you don't want to go there. You do not want to find yourself under giant despair. But if you do, what I'm trying to say is this, you're not alone. This has been the experience of countless people here this evening, and especially when you look at the history of the church. Now, I don't want to dwell on the fears tonight, otherwise I'll be dragging us all down. I know my tendency. Let's look at the antidotes. This is why we are looking at Hebrews 13. What do we do? Two things, and then we're finished. The first is this. Well, in both of the two things, we need to say this. I think it's Philippians in his commentary. No relation. Spiritually, we're related, but not physically. He puts it like this. Faith soliloquy. Am I pronouncing that right? Faith soliloquy. What's a soliloquy? Soliloquy is when you talk to yourself, as it were. That's what you've got to do. You've got to take yourself in hand, and you've got to try preaching to yourself. Have you ever tried preaching to yourself? You'll never fall asleep if you're preaching to yourself. And what do? Well, to quote a hymn, I found this hymn helpful. When you're being completely overwhelmed by fears, what do you say? You say, be gone, unbelief. My Saviour is near, and for my relief will surely appear. So in terms of this soliloquy, faith soliloquy, in the words of Dale Ralph Davis, you begin to speak faithfully. So instead of looking at the difficulties, you acknowledge that they're there. I'm not going to close my eyes to them. But what you're doing is reminding yourself of the promises of God. And we've got two promises here. And I just want to look at each one and then we'll be finished. The first promise is this. I will never leave you nor forsake you. That's from Joshua chapter 1. I think it's verse 5. So what do? I like this. I find this world to be an ocean. It's sometimes calm as a mirror. Things are going well. And in our folly, we tend to rest on our laurels and think that this is where we belong. But then God, in his providence and out of his kindness, brings a storm, and the waves begin to roar. And you've seen an ocean when it's in turmoil. It's no longer turquoise as it is when it's calm. It's all grey and brown, and we feel that we're in a state of flux. And this is what this world is, really. Maybe we have realized that since Thursday, the uncertainty. And it's not just the world there. Our own hearts are like water. Are they not unstable as water? I'm looking for constancy, and I can't find it anywhere. I can't find it in the world. I can't find it in the church. And I certainly can't find it within. But there is one person who is always constant, and that is God. God. He won't leave you. You may have everybody else turn their backs on you, but Jesus Christ is the friend that sticks closer than any brother. Aren't you glad of him tonight? He's a refuge. In the storm, I can shelter in him. So if you feel so changeable, sometimes you're up there, most of the times you're down in the depths. Don't look at that. Look to Jesus Christ. A little later on in Hebrews 13, you have the famous words, Jesus Christ the same, yesterday, today, and forever. Forever. Now, look at the quotation. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Now, I'm dependent here on the experts in the Greek and the Hebrew. According to them, the word never is used five times. So in the original, it goes like this. I will never, never, never leave you. And I will never, never forsake you. Is that five? Five nevers. Five nevers. I think the hymnist got that right in that hymn we sang. I think it was the second hymn. The soul that on Jesus has leaned for repose, I will not desert to its foes. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, I'll never, no, never, no, never forsake. And think of the words in Ecclesiastes. A threefold cord is strong. Is it not? These ropes that rock climbers use, do you know how much they can take? Do you know how much they can hold? This is true. They can hold about 10 double-decker buses, those ropes. That's how strong they are. How strong is the rope of the promise? Anne Griffiths often talked about the ropes of the promises in prayer, bringing down the blessing, using the ropes of the promises. How much weight can they take? The weight of 10 double-decker buses? Oh, more than that. It's taken the weight of my sin, all the guilt. It can take the weight of yours as well. It can take the weight of our cares. Whatever you are burdened tonight, if you lay it on Christ, he'll bear it. You know, don't you feel sometimes my burden is too much that I can bear? It's too much to unload on another Christian. It's not too much for him. It's not that rope. We're attached. We're attached. I mentioned the Sydney Harbour Bridge this morning. Have you been to Sydney? I've never been to Sydney. But somebody was telling me over lunch that they went once to the harbour. And they didn't just go to the harbour and see the bridge. They climbed the bridge. I'd love to do that. Not just climb the tower, but climb the span and walk over the bridge. Now, if you ever do that, you have to be attached with a rope to the bridge, just in case. Think of it. If you slipped, it doesn't matter. That rope is strong. And what that rope is attached to is even stronger. And you know what, my friends? The rope is attached to Christ. And he's the strongest of them all. I will never forsake you. Fear not, worm Jacob. I am thy God. Have you ever listened to Mendelssohn? He was a Christian, Mendelssohn, and he wrote an oratorio called Elijah. And half of it isn't about Elijah. You've just got these glorious Bible verses put in song. And the centerpiece of it is the choral piece in the middle. Be not afraid. I'm not going to sing it. I'm tempted to, but I won't. Be not afraid, because you're attached to Christ. Some in our church have done some skydiving. And what happens is you're attached to a professional skydiver. So it doesn't matter if you can't open your chutes. He'll take care of it, or at least you hope. I heard of one incident, and this is a true story, where the chute wouldn't open, not just with the person doing the sky jump, but to the person that they're attached to. And do you know what happened? The professional knew he was going to die, and to protect the other person from death, he made sure that he landed first. And isn't that a weak picture of what Christ has done for us? We deserved the covenant curse, because we are the ones who have broken the law of God. But we're attached to Christ, and we died with him, so that in his death, he took the curse instead of us. And we're still attached to him, and he's no longer dead. He's risen, and he's in control, and all power in heaven and on earth has been appointed to him. And he's the one we're attached to. Aren't you glad? Now, we're very privileged to have the pastor of Greyfriars Free Church of Scotland with us tonight in Inverness. And one pastor of that church, Donald MacDonald, he's got this quote. I just want you to think for a moment. Me as a Christian, enduring, is not dependent on my own strength. It's dependent on me being attached to Christ. So think of the rope, if you want, or think of Thomas Goodwin's illustration of being attached to the belt of Christ. God ultimately only sees two people. He sees the first Adam and the last, not the second, the last Adam. Christ fulfilled the work of redemption. There's no need of another Adam. And we are either attached to the belt of the first Adam or the belt of Christ. And taking that up, this is how Donald MacDonald put it. Can God forsake Christ, who is at his right hand? Can he shut him out? Can he put him out of heaven and exclude him from the holy place? It is blasphemous to imagine it. It is an impossibility. And then he goes on to say, and it is equally impossible that any true believer in Christ will be forsaken. If God will forsake you, then he will forsake Christ, for you are a member of Christ's body, of his flesh, and of his bones. You are part of Christ. If God forsakes you, then he will forsake Christ. But that cannot happen. And so I feel like a wimp. When I have to come into this pulpit, I quake with fear. But you know what? I'm attached to the strong one. And you are as well. And it doesn't matter what the devil may roar. He is stronger. He's more than match. So that's the first thing. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And then very quickly, the second quote is from Psalm 115. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? What can man do to me? Bring out your threats. Bring out your resources. However poor I may feel myself to be, I have a Father who is more than capable. Wasn't this Moody? Well, it probably was Moody's Secret, but what was the name of that Cornish miner? Billy Bray. He used to say, I'll take it to Father. I've got a rich Father. Have you got a rich Father? Have you got a millionaire as a Father? Have you got a Father who isn't just the Prime Minister, but the ruler of the universe? Of course you have. I have as well, and he's my father. Oh, my friend, that's wonderful. And it's not just my father, I've got an older brother. Let me share this with you. I was bullied at school. That's why I've turned out like this. I had a horrendous time at school. I'd changed school so often, I never settled down. I was always the outsider. And as a result, I was bullied, and it was horrible. And I didn't have an older brother. I had a younger sister. So I didn't have anybody to stand up for me. But I've got an older brother now. And his name is Jesus. Deliverer! And let Satan accuse me. He will defend me. And he will defend you as well. Don't be cowed by fear, my friends. We are giving in to a spirit of fear in the West. Stand up for Jesus. Because he's mighty. Mighty. And we have the Spirit. And the Spirit energizes us. Don't you feel like giving up sometimes? I've lost count of the number of times now I've said, I can't go on, Lord. I just can't do it anymore. And lo and behold, the next morning, there is new strength. And I shouldn't be surprised, and you shouldn't be surprised when that happens. Because God has promised, as your days, so shall your strength be. As your days, so shall your strength be. And so we can even see God in control of every detail. I'm coming to a conclusion here. I just want to mention William Carey. What was he like? Do you know what Carey was like? Have you ever got this idea of Carey as this giant of a man? And that's why he went to India and was used of God. Banish that from your thoughts. Carey, I stood in the museum in Serampore. I don't know what Carey would have made of a museum to him. And there was a poster, and it said, William Carey, under-educated, underfunded, and underestimated. And by God, he overcame a plethora of obstacles to bring the gospel to India. Something a little more personal. Amy Carmichael, born in Northern Ireland. And you know what? As a little girl, she hated the fact that God had given her brown eyes. She didn't have eyes like anybody else. Brown eyes. Why, Lord, have you done this to me? And then God called her to be a missionary in India. And she was a true missionary because she became as the Indians who had brown eyes. So you see, you shouldn't fear. Even your fears, God can turn around and make into a blessing. Oh, may the Lord draw near to us. I've got to stop there. Time has gone. I'm trying not to talk about Europe. But Martin Luther, living in tumultuous times in Europe, Martin Luther, really, really up and down. Martin Luther, right? He struggled with depression. And do you know what he used to say to his friend Philip? Philip Melanchthon. I don't know if he said Philip or Mr. Melanchthon. He used to say, when things were difficult, Philip, let's sing Psalm 46. And you know what? Luther was a musical man. And he composed a hymn based on Psalm 46. And I'm not sure if Luther composed the tune, or maybe it was J.S. Bach, I can't remember. But it's a good German tune. So let's now do what Luther said to Melanchthon.